Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We must face the simple truth. To protect America as a land that welcomes immigrants, we must first secure the border and secure it now.
President Biden issues an executive border order, which would enforce the right's anti-immigration agenda. This just before his first debate with Donald Trump. We'll get the latest. But first, we go to Gaza to speak with a Palestinian teen who lost 14 members of his family in an airstrike on his home in Gaza City. Then, when he and his parents and identical twin brother moved to Rafah, they were bombed into rubble. His mother killed.
There is no safe place in Gaza. I'm currently in Deir al-Balah, which is a green area. And you can see, you can hear the bombing every 10 minutes. I came from Mawasi Khan Yunis, which is also a green area. And, well, around 300 meters far from my tent, a bombing happened. There is no safe space in Gaza right now.
And the board of directors of the Columbia Law Review shuts down the Law Review's website after student editors published an article by a Palestinian legal scholar.
My legal scholarship tries to establish the Nakba, the Palestinian catastrophe, as an independent legal framework, one that overlaps with genocide and apartheid, remains different in its foundation, structure, and purpose. But most recently, the board of directors at the Columbia Law Review, after the piece has been solicited and edited and published, decided to shut down the entire website and take down the piece.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The American Civil Liberties Union has threatened to sue President Biden over his new executive order temporarily shutting down the U.S.-Mexico border and suspending protections for asylum seekers. ACLU attorney Lee Gelernt said, quote, "It was illegal when Trump did it, and it's no less illegal now," unquote. The ACLU warned Biden's executive order will put thousands of lives at risk. Biden announced the new policy at the White House Tuesday.
"This action will help us gain control of our border, restore order into the process. This ban will remain in place until the number of people trying to enter illegally is reduced to a level that our system can effectively manage."
President Biden made the announcement just weeks before his first debate with Donald Trump. Under the new measures, which went into effect just after midnight, the border would be closed whenever the daily average of asylum requests surpasses 2,500. It would remain closed until after the daily average falls to 1,500. In Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, migrants seeking asylum in the United States criticized Biden's move. This is Fausto Valenzuela from Ecuador.
"I hope Biden puts his hand on his heart and revokes what he has in mind of closing the borders. I hope he opens his heart to all migrants we see in the world attempting to cross into the United States."
We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. In India, final results from the world's largest ever election show Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi appears to have secured a term in office. But in a shocking development, his Hindu nationalist BJP party has lost its outright parliamentary majority. The BJP won 240 seats in the Indian parliament, down from over 300 in the last election. The BJP will now have to align with smaller parties to form a government to keep Modi in power. The opposition coalition, known as India, exceeded all expectations by winning 232 seats. Opposition leader Rahul Gandhi said, quote, "This is a huge message to Mr. Narendra Modi," unquote. Israel's killed at least 75 Palestinians in Gaza over the past 24 hours as Israeli forces attack the Bereish and Al-Maghazi refugee camps in central Gaza. Israeli strikes also killed 8 Palestinian police officers in Deir al-Balah on Tuesday. One Palestinian official accused Israel of deliberately killing police officers in an effort to spread chaos in Gaza. During an interview with Time magazine, President Biden was asked if Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was prolonging the war for his own political self-preservation. Biden responded by saying, quote, "There is every reason for people to draw that conclusion," unquote. A U.S. Army officer who resigned to protest the Biden administration's Gaza policies has spoken publicly for the first time. In an interview with CBS News, Major Harrison Mann, who worked at the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, criticized Israel's war on Gaza.
They were dropping 6,000 bombs a day. They were burning through munitions,
exhausting their supply.
You know, it was very easy to link our support, which I was part of, to the killing in Gaza.
What bothered this intelligence officer specializing in the Middle East the most? His view that the Israelis were targeting Palestinian civilians indiscriminately and that U.S. weapons made it possible.
Were the Israelis using American weapons against civilians in Gaza?
I can say almost certainly yes.
But were they doing so intentionally?
I don't know how you kill 35,000 civilians by accident.
Major Harrison Mann was interviewed by CBS News' Jim Axelrod. In news from Washington, the Republican-led House has voted to sanction international criminal court officials for seeking arrest warrants against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. The bill calls for sanctions against anyone involved in ICC investigations of Americans or U.S. allies that are not ICC members. The final vote, 247 to 155, with 42 Democrats joining Republicans. The bill heads to the Senate, where it's not expected to pass. The New York Times is reporting the Israeli government's been running a secret online campaign to influence and target U.S. lawmakers and the public to generate more support for its war on Gaza. The Times reports Israel's Ministry of Diaspora Affairs allocated $2 million for the operation, which has been carried out by an Israeli marketing firm called Stoic. Last week, the social media company Meta shut down hundreds of fake accounts set up by Stoic. The Times reports the campaign focused in part on Black Democratic lawmakers, including House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock. The covert operation also created fake accounts on the platform X and set up 3 fake English language news sites. Human Rights Watch has condemned Israel for repeatedly firing incendiary white phosphorus shells into southern Lebanon over the past 8 months. The group's verified white phosphorus attacks on 17 municipalities, including 5 towns where the shells struck populated residential areas. Lebanon's Ministry of Public Health says the attacks have injured at least 173 people. In election news, Congressmember Andy Kim has won New Jersey's closely watched Democratic Senate primary. Kim won 75% of the vote. Progressive think tank director Patricia Campos Medina placed second with 16%, and the longtime activist Larry Hamm won 9%. On the Republican side, Curtis Bashaw defeated Christine Serrano Glassner, who'd been endorsed by Trump. The New Jersey Senate seat is currently held by Democrat Robert Menendez, who's currently on trial for corruption centered on bribes tied to him. Last week, Senator Menendez filed papers to run for re-election as an independent. Menendez's son, Democratic Congressmember Rob Menendez, won his primary House race in New Jersey. Meanwhile, Joe Biden won the New Jersey Democratic presidential primary Tuesday, but nearly 9% of voters chose uncommitted. In many areas of New Jersey, the ballot line read, quote, "Uncommitted, justice for Palestine, permanent ceasefire now," unquote. Attorney General Merrick Garland testified on Capitol Hill Tuesday and decried what he called the, quote, unprecedented and unfounded attacks against the Department of Justice. Republican lawmakers are threatening to hold Garland in contempt for refusing to turn over audio recordings of President Biden's interview with special counsel Robert Hur. A transcript of the interview has already been made public. Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee grilled Garland about that case, as well as the criminal prosecutions of Donald Trump. Garland defended the agency's actions.
I will not be intimidated, and the Justice Department will not be intimidated. We will continue to do our jobs free from political influence, and we will not back down from defending democracy.
Ukraine has reportedly attacked Russian soil for the first time using a U.S.-made artillery system. This comes just days after the Biden administration gave Ukraine the green light to carry out such attacks, despite warnings from Russia. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is criticizing Biden for deciding not to attend an upcoming peace summit in Switzerland. Vice President Kamala Harris will attend instead. Biden, however, is expected to meet with Zelensky this week in Normandy, France, and again at the G7 summit in Italy. In the Mexican state of Michoacán, the mayor of Cotija was killed in an ambush Monday. Yolanda Sanchez Figueroa was walking home when she and her bodyguards were shot by assailants in a van. Sanchez's murder came shortly after Claudia Sheinbaum made history as the first woman elected president in Mexico's history. This year's election campaign was one of the most violent in Mexico. Gender violence was a central issue. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the International Committee of the Red Cross has suspended food distributions to people displaced by conflict as fighting between the Congolese army and M23 fighters intensifies. Violence has been spreading to Kanyabayonga, a town in the eastern DRC where tens of thousands of people have fled seeking shelter. About 7 million people have been internally displaced, with humanitarian aid groups describing this as one of the world's largest displacement crises. In election news, Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call has filed felony charges against Trump campaign attorney Kenneth Cheeseborough and two other men for their role in attempting to overthrow the 2020 election by appointing fake electors to the Electoral College. Cheeseborough is also facing criminal charges in Georgia. And opening arguments were heard Tuesday in the federal gun trial of Hunter Biden, who's the first child of a sitting president to ever face a criminal trial. Hunter Biden is accused of illegally purchasing a gun at a time when he was using drugs. On Tuesday, prosecutors played audio recordings of Hunter Biden reading the audiobook of his memoir about his struggle with an addiction to crack cocaine. Biden's lawyer, Abby Lowell, said Biden did not, quote, knowingly lie about his drug use when filing forms to purchase the gun. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Israeli forces began an escalated offensive on areas of central Gaza today, with airstrikes and ground forces moving into parts of Deir al-Balah, including the Bereij refugee camp. Al Jazeera reports at least 75 people have been killed in the past 24 hours in central Gaza, and the partially functioning hospitals in the area are struggling to cope with the surge in casualties. Meanwhile, Israeli troops are continuing their offensive on Rafah in the south, where more than 1 million people have fled over the past few weeks, many of them heading back towards central Gaza. Airstrikes are also continuing in the north as well. Over the past 8 months, Palestinians in Gaza have been displaced over and over again as they flee from one area to the next in a desperate search for safety. Today, we look at one young Palestinian story. He's 19-year-old Helmi Hires. He's from Gaza City in northern Gaza. As Israel escalated its attacks on Gaza City, he fled south to Rafah with his parents, an identical twin brother. a few days after they left, an Israeli airstrike hit their family home in Gaza City, killing 14 members of their family. Helmy spent 3 months sheltering in Rafah until an airstrike slammed into the building next to where he was staying, burying him, his parents, and his twin brother under the rubble. His mother was killed in that attack. Helmy then relocated yet again, this time to Almawasi, a coastal plot of land east of Khan Yunis. Helmy joins us now to tell his story. He's joining us from Deir Abala in central Gaza, and there is a very long delay between when we ask the question and he'll be able to answer it. But Helmy, welcome to Democracy Now! If you can start off by telling us your story, talk about your journey from Gaza City and what has happened to your family all along the way.
Okay. Thank you, Amy, for having me. Well, as you can see, I'm now in Deir al-Balah in Shuhada al-Aqsa Hospital. And it's super crowded here because several bombings have happened in the last 2 hours. The hospital is super crowded and many injured people are here. To start, I'm Helmy Harris, 19 years old. From Gaza City, Arimal neighborhood near Ashifa Hospital. Me and my family got out of Gaza on November 11th. After Ashifa Hospital and the entire Arimal neighborhood got invaded, we went into Rafah City, walking 5 kilometers on foot, while the Israeli army was pointing guns at us. And sometimes in this long road, I mean Salah al-Din Street Road, sometimes we needed to jump over dead bodies just to don't walk on them. Dead bodies that were left intentionally to create this horrifying mental effect. After 1 week of our departure from Gaza, our house in our Rimal neighborhood got bombed with 2 rockets, exactly in November 18th, and 14 beloved family members were killed there. In that day, November 18th, Israel killed over than 1,000 Palestinians. After that, we spent 3 months in Rafah City. And on February 12th, the building next to us got bombed, and we were in the center of Rafah City, in 2 floors building, and the building next to us was 4 floors building, and the spaces between the houses in the center of Rafah City is sometimes less than 1 meter. So when that building was bombed with 4 rockets, we got buried with the rubble, and I was able to get myself out of the rubble, and my twin brother, and my father, and start digging over my mother. We dug over then 1 meter of rubble, and we got our mother breathing, and some guys took her to the hospital as fast as possible, and we kept digging over our sister. We got our sister awake, but not aware. She was vomiting blood. We went to a near house, and we hide there. And unfortunately, my mother suffered from internal bleeding, and she didn't make it. After that, we went to Almawasi area, living in a tent. After 2 months in Almawasi area, a near place to where 200 meters, a near place in less than 200 meters where our camp was, got bombed with 2 rockets also, and which destroyed our entire camp, killing over 4 people, and it burned our tent, and we needed to buy a new one and move to another area in Almawasi. And this is just my continuous journey of displacement from one place to another, my continuous journey of loss from one place to another. We now live in Almawas area, in less than 2 kilometers far from where the Israeli army exists. We are super worried, and all the people in Almawas area are super worried that the Israeli army may come again to Khan Yunis City or may invade Almawas area. there's a lot of rumors about that. And whenever you're walking on Long Street, people are always looking for towards the south, where the fire and the flames are coming out of Rafah City. And you can hear the sounds of the shelling and the bombing of Rafah City all day long and all night long. We really don't know where we can go. It's very hard to know where the safe place is. I mean, we're now in a green area, and you can hear the bombing every 10 or 15 minutes. In Al-Mawasi, we're in a green area also, and you can hear the bombing all day long, and you can be targeted in any minute. We now live in a tent, which is super hard for me and my family. It's because Al-Mawasi and Rafah City has kind of a desert climate, because we are near to Sina Desert. It is super hot, and living in a tent is exactly like living in an oven. Sometimes, in some hours in the day, like 1 p.m., you need to get out of the tent so you can be able to breathe. You get out of the tent, sitting in the sun, just so you can able to breathe. Cooking on fire and all of these hard life conditions isn't suitable, isn't working for us. Me and my twin brother are programmers, and we would never experience this kind of hard lifestyle. I want to talk about that I started a campaign to help my family. Can you hear me?
I wanted to ask you. You were, first of all, condolences again for the loss of so many members of your family. Before the war, you and your twin brother were students. Could you talk to us about what you were studying and what your hopes were for your own future before the war?
Yes. I'm a computer engineering student, and my brother is an AI engineering student. I learned programming since the age of 10 years old, and I have worked for so many projects and so many companies. I got a pro in the field, and I learned so many skills. And my brother is a brilliant AI engineer. He developed so many great inventions. In coronavirus crisis, he developed a system so all the malls and all the public places can identify by camera if this person is wearing a mask or not, allow him to enter the building or not, and to limit the disease transportation. And it actually helped a lot in Gaza City. Most public places in Gaza City took his invention and used it. I was talking also about that I started a campaign to help my family, because my father was working in Israel before the war. He has permission to work in Tel Aviv, and when this war started, he lost his job, and after 3 months, we lost our mother, who is a digital marketing agent, so we lost our sole source of income, and we suffered a lot to provide the needed things for our family. So I started a GoFundMe campaign in hopes to help us hold the living expenses of the war, and after that, at least to rent an apartment and to help me and my brother to college tuitions to finish our education after we lost all of our sources of income.
You're talking about your FundMe page, Donate to Help a Twin. We're showing a photograph right now. We've been showing it of you and your identical twin brother, Muhammad. You're both, what, AI tech twins. Because you're known for working on AI. But I also wanted to comment on the noise behind you. Not our radio audience cannot see this, but we have seen dead bodies behind you wrapped in shrouds, because the place you are right now, right nearby, these attacks have taken place just in the last 24 hours. So there's a lot of chaos behind you, but we think it's worth working hard to hear what you have to say, given your incredible journey. And again, our condolences on the loss of so many of your family members, including your mother. I'm wondering, Helmy, if you can tell us more about your mother, the picture of you and your brother in your graduation gowns with your mom, with that lovely smile, and what her aspirations were for you. And where you plan to go now, given that the place you have moved to for I don't know how many times is now the site of Israeli bombing.
Yes, about the picture, this picture was taken last year in my high school graduation, in my last year in high school. The person on the left is me, Helmi. My name in Arabic means my dream. My mother named me. The person in the middle is my mother, Ibtisam, which means smile. And she always smiled. And the person on the left is my identical twin brother, Muhammad. We don't really know where we can go right now because there is no safe place in Gaza. I mean, we went to Rafah City since the day one of the war. They told us, they threw papers from the plane saying, go to Rafah City, go to this specific area. And they drew it on the map. We went there since the beginning of the war. And eventually they ordered us to go out of this area. So we really don't know where to go. Especially in this time of the war, people don't know where to go. They are afraid from going to Deir al-Balah, and because the Israeli army didn't invade Deir al-Balah before, so they may invade it now. They don't know where to go. They can't go to Al-Mawasi. I mean, it's very close to Rafah City where the Israeli army exists, and they may invade it from this area. Now we just squeezed in the middle, and you can see the place I'm in right now. Every single second you can see an ambulance coming to here. And I'm still under shock because just 2 minutes before this interview starts, I saw a shattered dead body. And it was a super horrifying scene. I still can't process that. After all I went through, I still can't process seeing this kind of destructive.
And Helmi, what would you, if you could reach out and tell the rest of the world, the people outside of Gaza, what you're hoping the world can do to assist you and the other Palestinians in Gaza right now?
Well, they can raise their voices to ask for the stop of this genocide that is happening in Gaza. And I can't find any other word that describes what is happening other than genocide. They can donate to help the people of Gaza and donate to help building Gaza all over again. Well, the destruction in Gaza has removed the entire city. It just make it sands over the sands. 2 days ago, I was in Khan Yunis City. And, well, as far as your eye can see, it is all sands. The city does not exist anymore.
Helmi Hittis, we want to thank you so much for...
You can help me by donating to my GoFundMe and my campaign to help my family.
Helmi, thank you so much for joining us in this extremely difficult, difficult time. We can't say enough how much we send our condolences to your entire family. Helmi Hittis is a 19-year-old Palestinian, originally from Gaza City, 14 members of his family killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza City just after he, his mom and his dad, his twin brother and sister left and went to Rafah, where they were then struck in an airstrike, struck into the rubble, his mother killed. We will continue to follow Helmi's story and bring you more later. Next up, the board of directors of the Columbia Law Review shuts down the Law Review's website after student editors published an article by a Palestinian legal scholar on establishing Nakba as a formal legal concept. Stay with us. Thank you.
was told I could be anything that I wanted to be. Well, God said you can't make money if you fulfill your dreams. But if you look at the people that are better than me, trying to find a way around this power scheme. What's it all mean? What's it all mean? What's it all mean? What's it all mean? What's it all mean?